My name's Adam Martin. I'm an alcoholic.
Adam.
Hi. I've been sober since April 29th, 2013.
Yay!
I was born in 1981. So I'm going to share, I guess, what it was like, what happened, what it's like now with my home group, kind of being the core of that. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous around 2000, and when I came in, there was a group of young people, the Northern Plains group, which is my home group today. We meet on Tuesday nights at the Copper Ridge building at 7:30. All the girls sat on one side. All the guys sat on the other side. Girls wore dresses. Men wore suits. One guy wore one dress. And so I came in, they knew I was new. I was wearing sweatpants and a t-shirt, right? And when I came in, I had heard about Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a powerhouse meeting in Moorhead called the Moorhead Thursday Night. And one guy. And there was a guy there, Don N., who sponsored, like, every guy at that meeting, right? And my dad went to that meeting, and my mom and dad met in treatment. Listen, new people. I was pretty much screwed from the start, right? My dad was a biker. He had wore all leather, had, you know, a beard, like a beard down to his chest. He looked like an Arabian Santa Claus. And he's sitting in the back of the meeting, and the first experience I had with the home group was the Moorhead Thursday night. I was that annoying little kid that would run around in the back of the meetings trying to get everybody's attention on me. I'm still doing it to this day. Right. You know what's funny is that I don't remember anyone ever, like, trying to discipline me about it, right, or telling me to be quiet. Everyone was just, I remember all the women gave me hugs when I came to the meeting, and all the guys would, like, try and teach me how to shake hands, you know. And that was my first experience with him. My dad didn't stay sober. He died drunk 2 years ago. And he was one of those guys that when it was in AA for a while and then got all the one-liners and then tried to repeat them when they were drunk, you know, and he'd be like, you know, I was like, Dad, I'm not going to go to a meeting. He's drunk. I'm sure he's on my side, right? He's like, you know what Don N. says? He's like, you don't miss a meeting unless, you know what, I need a beer. So 2000, I go to this Northern Plains group, all the girls, one side guys. And I didn't really, I mean, I knew about Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew that they were happy, and I didn't know how they were not drinking. I really just wanted you to explain to me how I could drink. And so when I came into the meeting, there was this guy, 300-pound black guy wearing a three-piece suit, what seemed like he was pounding at the podium when he was talking. He reminded me a lot of Freddie Jackson, right, or Al Sharpton. And he came up to me, and everybody there asked me, the first thing anyone asked me, do you have a sponsor, right? And then they got me a phone list, and they said, you got to call three people on this list every day, and you got to set up three coffee commitments every week, and you're going to go through the big book with a sponsor. And I still didn't really catch what they wanted me to do. And then at the end of the meeting, they're like, if you don't have a big book, we have very liberal credit arrangements. And then they held up this book, and everyone's like, ooh. And I was like, they want me to sell big books. Right? I bet I could sell 10 before I leave, right? And so I got this sponsor, and my sponsor was real big on being of service to others. It was kind of like the two-step, 112, 112, 112, 212, 212, 312, 312, right? Constantly seeking people out at the meetings and seeing how you can be of service to them. And that was my first experience working with others. He's like, be of service. And what I heard is sponsor people, right? I'm 2 weeks sober, and this guy comes up to me. He's like, will you sponsor me? I'm like, yes. And I'm like, here's a phone list, here's a big book, we're going to go through the big book. And he's like, wow, you've been through the steps. I'm like, no, I'm on the forwards. And then what happened was, I was about 6 months sober, and I got a job with a bunch of people that were in my home group, like a real job. They wanted me to run heavy equipment, which I'm still surprised they gave me that job. I got fired from that job. I got drunk that night. And later that night, I went to that to that building, and I took all the laptops, the computers, the dilly bars out of the fridge, took the money. I broke in through the drywall in the bathroom, through the garage. I stole a U-Haul next door, threw it all in the U-Haul, and just started driving. I had no plan. I don't know where I was going. I had a I'm like, I'm going to sell this stuff on the black market. I don't know where the black market is, right? Woke up about 20 minutes later, or 20 minutes later, the next day, in 20 miles away. And before I even opened my eyes, I could smell the cigarette butts, and I could smell the beer, and I knew I did it again. I just didn't know to what length I had done it again. And then I left, and I went on a run for a long time. Ended up, I woke up in Omaha, and then I woke up in Alabama, and I figured I must be on the run. I'm going to Mexico, right? Grandma lives in Alabama, and I went with her, and she does what grandmas do. She loved on me, gave me a place to stay, hydrated me, convinced me to go back to North Dakota and turn myself into the cops, and I did. And for the next 10 years, went in and out. And in the meantime, I met this girl, and she was the love of my life. And she was in AA. She went to my home group, too. We had a kid, and shortly after we had my son, I started drinking again, and I left. And I didn't come back for a couple of years. So tried a bunch of different magic bullets, if you will, to try and stay sober. Went to a religious treatment center for 13 months. Got a good grasp of the Bible. Came back and told everybody they were going to hell. Right? I was like, well, I don't get why no one wants to be my friend. And drank while I was leading Bible studies at church. And I remember guys feeling convicted about how they lied to their wives the day before. And I remember I'd be like, man, he feels really bad for lying. I stole a car last night, right? And he's confessing to me. I eventually came back, and there was, so all those guys that were working at that company still go to that home group, right? And that girl that I was engaged to was going to that home group, and she was engaged to another guy at that home group. And when I sobered up, I had a job, I had an apartment, I found out I had a cat. I think I stole it, is really what happened. So if you haven't stolen a cat, you're not, I don't know. I don't know how to finish that one. I knew I wanted to get sober. I woke up out of a blackout, and I was naked and had a cigarette hanging, you know, in my hand and a beer bottle in the other one. My computer was open to Skype. I still don't know who was on the other end. whatever, they got a good show. We'll just put it that way. And so I was walking to the bar, and I was going to have, I didn't have any money, but I knew I could get alcohol. And on the way there, this little thought in the back of my head said, why don't you put an ounce into your recovery as you do into drinking and see what happens? I will walk miles to get a drink. I don't know if you're familiar with blizzards in North Dakota, but I've walked through them to get alcohol. And that thought popped in my head, and I didn't have a cell phone. I actually had just lost my job that day. I got an eviction notice earlier that day. And I had 50 cents in my pocket, and I called the guy from the Northern Plains Group. And I remembered his number, put the 50 cents in. And I mean, when I put the 50 cents in, I'm like, you know, if it goes to voicemail, you've lost the 50 cents, right? That's seconds and inches of this phone call. And he does what we do in our home group. We answer our phones. And I was like, Andre, I know you've heard it all before, but listen. I got a plan. I want to get sober. I'm going to do the meetings. I'm going to stay away from new girls. I'm going to get a sponsor and all this stuff. And he's like, sweet. Why don't you, you know, come over or whatever. I was like, sweet. Where do you live? He's like, by the airport. That's like 7 miles from my house. I don't have a car. I'm like, can you come pick me up? I called like the one guy in a home group that still doesn't have a license, right? He was riding his bike to a meeting at that moment. And so I walked all the way there, because that whole thought, just put an ounce into your recovery, right? And I walked all the way there, and it's, dude, my life has been crazy awesome since the minute I walked into his house. That whole 7 miles or whatever it is to his house, that obsession to drink was stronger than it's ever been. And to this day, the only thing that got me through that was God. Because it doesn't take much for me to convince myself, right? I could have the best life in the world, and I'll think I overreacted about sobering up, right? And from that point, I got a sponsor, and he said, I want you to be of service, Adam. You don't have to sponsor everyone, right? And so 2 weeks over, this guy comes up to me, and he's like, hey, man, I need a ride to the meeting. I'm living in Horace, North Dakota, which is like 11 miles out of town, out of Fargo. And that little voice in the back of my head, say yes to all AA requests. Say yes. And I'm like, sure, I'll pick you up tonight, right? I don't have a car. I don't have a license. And so I call my buddy Fred, and I'm like, hey, Fred, guess what? We're picking up a new guy tonight. My sponsee brother. And so Fred, in my home group, I mean, what I'm about to tell you is the epitome of most guys in our home group. Fred lives in Fargo. I live in Horace, 11 miles out of town. Every morning after I got my job, Fred would come out all the way to Horace, pick me up. He'd drop me off at work. After work, he'd come pick me up. And then we'd go pick up a new guy. And then we'd drive to a meeting. And then we'd drive the new guy home. And then he'd drive out to Horace. And then he would drive back home. And we did that Monday through Friday for 6 months. I'm here because of my home group. Right? Since then, I've had two kids. Not since then. Wow. I have a 16-year-old son who was adopted when he was 7 in a closed adoption. I have a 7-year-old. He turned 7 on July 1st with another woman. When I went back to that home group, I had no rights to either one of them. I went back to that home group, those four guys that were working at that company. When I came back, in my mind, I'm like, they're going to shun me. She's going to shun me. I'm going to end up fighting her fiance right in the back of the meeting by the coffee, right? And when I walked in there, all those guys, and I knew where they were because they were construction workers, and they were all wearing green, just like the host committee here, right? And when I walked here, I got a little backflash, you know, from those guys. And every single one of them came up to me and shook my hand. My first thought was, your sponsor put you up to this, right? Like, I'm that important, right? And then I walked around the corner, and there she was. And she came up to me, and she gave me a hug, and she told me she was glad to see me. And I was like, well, apparently your sponsor is in on this too, right? I think she's here, actually. And part of the thing that we did with new guys in our group is we did couch commitments. So if you didn't have a place to stay, you could stay on our couches. 3-day rotations. Everything comes in threes with our group for some reason. So you stay at this. But the crazy thing is we had an apartment complex of guys that were living together in our group, right? There was 8 apartments. 6 of them were filled with 3 drunks each. You want a new guy to get sober? Send him to the compound, right? I still think it's a little weird that we call it the compound. And so on this couch, and the whole time I was going through that couch, which I forgot to mention, I was stealing, lying, cheating from all the people in that house, right? A guy would leave his wallet on there, and I would take the wallet, right? And then he would come over and be like, man, I can't find my wallet. And I'd help him look for it, right? And then, like, throw it off to the side. Oh, there it is. Can't believe you missed that, right? This is what I did to this home group, let alone tried to sleep with as many new girls while I was there. Right? I was a crappy member of this home group. And the crazy thing is other than them busting my chops all the time about it, they've always been there with a car. They've always been there with a cup of coffee. They've always set up coffee dates with me or answered my phone. Right? It's weird calling people you don't know when they're like, call 3 people a day. But they know you're doing it. So they break the ice. Right? In our home group, the epitome of what we try to do is to make the new guy feel comfortable so he wants to come back. And I push the limits on that. there's probably a lot of people in my home group that probably deep down don't like me very much. But I don't know who they are. You know. The first kid I got back, my youngest one, and his mom goes to our home group, and she waited, you know, a couple months before I could start talking to him, didn't let him spend the night at my house, and now after a couple years, he stays at my house every single weekend, right? My oldest one, the one that I thought I'd never see again because he was in a closed adoption, stayed at my house the last 3 weekends. These are some of the cool things I get to be a part of because you guys showed me how to show up, right? How to suit up. No matter how I feel, I go to my home group. No matter who's driving me crazy, there's always that one guy in the home group that just, you know. My sponsor's direction, he should be the first hand you shake when you go there. I'm really grateful for my home group. I'm really grateful for the people, all the guys and girls who serve on the district and the inner group that are in our home group. I have kind of two home groups, if you want to call it that. Northern Plains group is my Tuesday night meeting. The Bring Your Own Big Book meeting is on Monday nights. And I actively go to that every week. And it's cool because everybody in there has a commitment within the district. And it's an open meeting on both of them because we know that there's people in the community that don't say that they're alcoholic, but we'll go to an open meeting. You know, so I just tell people that I'm a member of the NPG BYOBB. I'm really grateful for my sponsor, who's also in my home group. He sponsors like 12 guys, so I can't get away with crap at my home group because they're quick to... You always have that one sponsee brother who's like kind of the brown noser, you know? Like, Jeff, can you tell us what the third step means, right? Right in front of everybody, you know? Oh, I'm glad you asked, right? So I'll end with this. I'm sponsored. My sponsor's sponsored. I don't know who Clancy's sponsored by. I think he's like the Knights of the, you know, Round Table or something. I sponsor a bunch of guys. Some of those guys sponsor guys. And that part in the book where it says, a fellowship you crave. I used to think that that meant I'm going to create a bunch of guys who like me and pay attention to me all the time, right? This guy knows what I'm talking about. But I'll tell you, man, sponsoring people or sponsoring guys, when I first started doing it, I thought it was going to be all about me and what I had to say and stuff like that. And I'll be honest with them, like, man, I'm really, you know, I'm just not feeling it today. I'm a little restless. I'm irritable. I'm discontent. You know, try to be transparent with the guys that I sponsor. And they'll sit there and be like, So there's this girl. Right? I'm the same way, right? With my sponsor. So I'm grateful that there was a group of guys and girls who came together. There was 30 people in our home group when I started going to it, and I think there's probably 115 that go to it now. And everywhere you look, you see someone talking to someone who's new. And it says in the big book that we meet frequently so that new people may find us. And we go to a lot of meetings. And it used to be about what I could drop on the table so I could feel better about myself. And now I look for the guys who are dropping stuff on the table and work with them and try and get them through the steps because that's where the recovery happens. It doesn't matter how many meetings you go to. It doesn't matter who your home group is. It doesn't matter. None of that really matters. If that mattered, then that was all we'd have to do. Right? They're a big deal, but the recovery happens in the steps. And my home group actively try to get as many people every day through something in the steps. And I'm grateful to be a part of it because they saved my life. With the Op House.
Thanks, Adam. The good news, or maybe it's the bad news, is if you keep coming back and doing this deal, you're going to end up being a pillar. I know it's shocking. Shocking to me. So our next speaker is from Providence, Rhode Island, and her name is Jen M.
Okay, ma'am. Thank you. Good morning. My name is Jen, and I am an alcoholic. I'm a lot of other things, too, but most importantly, I'm a human being, and I'm an alcoholic just like you. And by the grace of God, the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, July 22nd will be 9 years. Thank you. My current home group is the Room to Grow Ladies Meeting, which starts in a half an hour in Providence, Rhode Island on the Brown campus, Brown University campus. It's an open meeting. It's a beginner meeting. And it's a speaker discussion. It's just good stuff. And thank you to Alcoholics Anonymous also for this invitation. And for allowing me to be a service, hopefully God's will be. So I've been reflecting a lot on this topic the past couple of weeks, you know, just trying to put it out to the universe and to the higher power, my understanding of what this means for me and what my journey was. And I'm going to start off because for me, a lot of people came before me, and a lot of good stuff was written about this, and I don't have to reinvent the wheel. And in our pamphlet, the AA group, most of us cannot recover unless there is a group. As Bill said, realization dawns on each member that he is but a small part of a great whole. He learns that the clamor of desires and ambitions within him must be silenced whenever these could damage the group. It becomes plain that the group must survive or the individual will not. My friends are having bets about when I'm going to cry. And when I read things like that, it reminds me how big this disease is and how big our recovery is. And being here is a great reminder of that. And when I reflect on this, the word home means a lot to me. And when I was, while I was growing up, I didn't feel at home in my house. I was provided for, cared for, fed, clothed, but there's quite a bit of family of origin, alcoholism, untreated, Al-Anon, all that good stuff. And that brought a lot of fear out in me. And so when I was actively drinking, I found a home. usually on a bar stool or out of my parents' liquor cabinets. Yes, that's plural. but I found a home within myself. I felt okay. And I felt like I was the person I was supposed to be. Needless to say, that was all a delusion and misperception of reality. So being at home and finding a home and being accepted has been a really important topic in my recovery. And coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, I came in on a Saturday night in July in Scottsdale, Arizona. I was living out there because that was my geographic. Hey, Jesse. Oh, don't worry. You're getting another shout out. I came in on the coattails of my best friend at the time who had just gotten an extreme DUI. And I felt like something needed to change even before that happened, but I didn't know what it was. It was God's way of saying, you need to change. I know that now. But came in on her coattails, and we went to the 11 p.m. meeting of Ought Not Be Organized in Scottsdale, Arizona, at the North Scottsdale Fellowship Club. And that was my first home group. And speaker said it last night, talks about people who do not mix. That was us. 11 p.m., 7 days a week, whoa. You know, we were college students, strippers, business people, screenwriters, you know, wealthy, whatever. And but they talked about recovery, and they talked about Alcoholics Anonymous, and they talked about the program in our book. And they talked about what was going on with them, and they showed me how to push in chairs. And they said, at 3 months, okay, here, you're going to chair. I'm like, what? What? I'm sorry. And they showed me the three sides of the triangle. And they said, do you have a sponsor? What's a sponsor? And I am forever grateful because they set me on this path. They lit that path for me. And while the 11 p.m. was great, there was only so long that I could sustain that. Because, oh, I have to go to sleep, you know, and actually get sleep and not pass out. And but I met a couple of women in that meeting, and we were going to the Tuesday night No Frills meeting. And we were just talking about this while we've been here. And there's nothing like that first group of people who really dig in with you, and you get sober with them, and you start to learn about Alcoholics Anonymous and about life on life's terms with them. And just like I used to chase the effect of a drink, a lot of times I've chased the effect of a home group. And I don't know if that makes sense. I see some people doing that, yeah. Because it was such a special, special time. All of us getting sober, all of us learning together, learning what principles before personalities mean, learning to call each other out on our stuff and not co-sign our BS. we learned how to have, you know, business meetings and how to get outside of ourselves for the better good of the group, how to contribute to Alcoholics Anonymous financially and as group. And I learned so much of that in that No Frills Tuesday night meeting, and a lot of us are still so spiritually connected as a result of it, you know, and we're here this weekend, and it's just so overwhelming for us because we don't even have to say anything. We can just look at each other and know, you know. So in 2006, no, that's when I get sober, 2007, 2008, one of the only disappointment that my parents really had in me, that they'll admit anyway, was that I didn't finish college. And I had made a visit back, and they, I realized how much I missed my family, which was odd because I had this whole new family in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And I had the opportunity to go back to school to finish that degree. And so I moved back in Christmas time, 2008, went to school January 2009. And, you know, I was a little nervous. I was like, what do I do? And they're like, you get plugged into Alcoholics Anonymous. So I started, before I even left, I called Central Service, and I said, do you have somebody, I could, do you have a sponsor list? Because at that time, my sponsor had actually ended up going out 2 weeks before I moved back. And I called up frantically and say, apparently frantically, she'll say I called frantically. And she said, I said, do you have a temporary sponsors list? Because I need to call in, you know, because that's what my home group taught me to do. I need to call in to somebody while I'm traveling. She's like, well, no, we don't do that kind of thing, but you can call here every day. She said, okay. And she figured she'd never hear from me again. Well, she was my sponsor for 4+ years when I moved back. And when I got back here, you know, one of the first thing I had research meetings in the area and with school and life and all that. And, the first meeting I walked into, you know, ended up becoming my new home group. And, that was a whole new challenge because I was doing it more out of convenience. The people were welcoming. So that made me feel like, oh, all right, cool. But the group, how do I say this? I had to learn a lot of lessons in that group. The group hadn't had a business meeting in 7 years. the positions people hadn't rotated out, and I didn't understand that, you know, and this was a chance to introduce the traditions. And, you know, what business do I have doing that? And what do I know? So it was a really big growth opportunity with this group to learn from them and to learn about why the traditions are so important in our group, because it's not it's such a paradox. It's not just about our one group. It's about all our groups. It's about the greater whole. And how are we affecting each other? And that was, as I said, it was a challenging experience, but I'm so grateful for it. I probably still owe that group an amends, and I will review that with my sponsor. but it was definitely, when I moved back to Rhode Island, it was hard finding a home. It was hard finding that place to fit, and that first group was a good start. And then I jumped around from a few different groups here and there, because I wanted to find that tribe. You know, I wanted to find that tribe where I could connect and be vulnerable and be of service to the best of ability. And so I jumped around a little bit here and there, found another wonderful women's meeting. I always had a women's meeting and then another group, and I was usually involved with both of them. And I started going to the Sunday morning meeting, and I had been praying about this, and I had been talking to my sponsor about this whole home group thing. And I started going fairly regularly, and wouldn't you know it, it was this group of 50-plus rockin' lesbian ladies. And they just, the way they talk about their sobriety, the way they talk about life on life's terms, though, you know, they continue to suit up and show up on a daily basis. And I wanted what they had, you know. So I joined their group and got involved. And this is the longest time I've been in a home group since I moved to Rhode Island. I think it's about 3.5 years. And this is a group that contributes regularly to Alcoholics Anonymous. To our, we have four entities we contribute to. We hold regular business meetings. We recently just finished a group conscience, and I wanted to share about this because it really was amazing. The group has changed quite a bit over the past few years, and it's been an amazing gift to see how diverse we are now and to see newcomers not only come in, but they stay. They stay, and they live, and they go through stuff, and we all get to bear witness to it and be there for them, you know. And what they don't realize is they're there for us. And it's been such a gift to see some of these women who, you know, for the first couple of weeks and the couple of months, and you guys know this, you've seen it, you've been it, you know, as I have been, just down and out in a mess and, you know, hopeless. And then you start to see that fade away. You know, what? That's what happens when I show up regularly at my home group. You know? When I had originally put my name, how are we doing? Okay, good. When I had originally, when they asked for our names to be drawn for this, I was, in a very difficult spot personally last fall. And, you know, I thought I wasn't working my program correctly. And by the grace of God, I was able to continue to go to my home group, and a couple of those women, I shared with them what was going on. And being vulnerable is not one of my strong suits. Being vulnerable healthily is not one of my strong suits. And these beautiful women, they checked in on me. They made suggestions. They hugged me. And I took their suggestions, and I continued to suit up and show up. And so when this offer came around to put your name in, it was so completely uncomfortable to do. It was like crawling out of my skin. But I knew if I was feeling all right that you suit up and show up, and you be of service in Alcoholics Anonymous no matter how you do it. So put my name in, let go, let God. Not thinking anything like was actually going to happen. So when I got that email a couple months ago, and we were talking about this a little bit beforehand, I knew God's plan was you need to be here and get over some things and be of service. And being in that home group has taught me how to do that. So the recent group conscience. So a lot of people, him and ha, when they hear there's a business meeting, you know, when they hear we're doing a group conscience meeting, and negative Nelly all around. How many people have experienced that? Yeah, everybody's like, yep. For me, I absolutely adore the process in Alcoholics Anonymous of both of those things. It's a training ground. It's a way to learn how to practice principles before personalities. We do this not because we have to today. We do it because we want to. You know, that's one of the other gifts of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we did a mini group conscience. We had a few items to review. And it was ended up being split into 2 hours on 2 different weekends. And last weekend, we're sitting there, and I looked around the room, and we had new members. We had long-timers. We had middle-of-the-roaders. You know, we had people who have experience in service. We had people who are just getting started. And we're going through these topics, and the experience they all shared was absolutely amazing. We actually had a minority opinion sway an entire vote. And as some of you, yeah, there we go. That's amazing to see. That's amazing to see. And if you've never had that opportunity, I highly suggest that you find out when your group's conscience is or when your group inventory is. How are we doing over there? Oh, not too shabby. Okay. So getting back to the topic of home and home group. I've also been reflecting so much on the whole idea of home and where what that means to me today. Thank you. And Alcoholics Anonymous is my home. And it's taught me to be at home wherever I go. Because God showed me that I'm enough today. And I'm enough for me, and I'm enough for you. And wherever I go, I can be at home. I got to visit Phoenix a couple of weeks ago. And the first full day there was very difficult because as much as I enjoy my life here, you know, in Rhode Island, being there in Phoenix with all of these beautiful ladies that I got sober with, that felt like home too. It was a really difficult moment. but I'm so grateful for that. Ooh, 2 minutes. I'm so grateful because Alcoholics Anonymous taught me how to ask for help. And I asked some people to be here today because you make this home for me. And you teach me and you show me how to be a good alcoholic in recovery. So if you don't have a home group, and I don't want to get preachy, I may a little. Find your tribe. Find your people that you roll with. You know, I look in the front row. I'm trying not to look in the front row because I'm going to start crying in a second. Because they roll with each other all the time. Let people get to know you. It's okay. It's okay to let people get to know you. Because you never know when they'll need you or when you'll need them. I'm going to end with this. This is also out of the AA pamphlet. Over the years, the very essence of AA strength has remained with our home group, which for many members becomes our extended family. Once isolated by our drinking, we find in the home group a solid continuing support system, friends, and very often a sponsor. We also learn firsthand through the group's workings how to place principles before personalities in the interest of carrying the AA message. Keep it simple, you know. And as the speaker last night said, stay. Just stay. You know, when it's, guess what, life on life terms going to happen, whether we're alcoholic or not. Suit up and show up, and don't give up. Never give up. So thank you for allowing me to be a service.
Okay, so thank you, Jen. That's very good. And we have with us today from Rochester, New York. Her peeps are here. Megan C.
Hi, everybody. I'm Megan. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, guys. It's so good to be here today. What a blessing. What a beautiful weekend. I'm going to say the same kind of tape recording that I start out with every time that I speak, and that's that my sobriety date's November 30th of 2009. So I have about 5.5 years of sobriety. I have a wonderful sponsor. She's here today, and she has taken me through the 12 steps. As a result of that, I've had a spiritual awakening and a profound personality change. I sponsor a few women. I've taken them through the steps. I have a service position. I do service in and outside of my home group, and I'm the representative for the Education and Participation Committee for our area, and I have a home group, and that's the Love and Service Group. We meet every Saturday night at the corner of Empire and Hellendale in Rochester, New York. We're an open meeting, and we study all three sides of the triangle, which means we look at the steps, the traditions, and the concepts, and it's the highlight of my week, and often it's the highlight of my life. And I'm not saying that that's part of my tape recording. I'm not saying that because I'm here talking about the home group tonight. That's what I say whenever I speak, and I mean it. I say it because it's true. It's the highlight of my life. It is a spiritual party that I get to go to every single week. And sometimes a lot of the other stuff that I do in AA, like my service work and working with a sponsor or working with a sponsee and answering the phone and that kind of stuff, it feels like a lot of work to me. And my home group never feels like work. It honestly feels like something that I can't believe I get to do every week. And if that's not your experience with the home group, I don't know if that you'll necessarily get drunk, but I think that you're missing out because it's the best part of my week. And when I first came in, I'm just going to like talk a little bit about my experience with what it's been like to have a home group. And when I first came in, people were so kind to me, and they, you know, they took me around and they showed me the way, and they told me what to do here. And one of the things they said is get a home group. And in Rochester, there's usually a book at the front of the table, and they say, this is our home group book. You can sign it, the name, your name, and the day of your last drink, and we'll celebrate your anniversary with a coin and a hug. And so I signed every book I went to. Every meeting I went to, I had about probably, I have the 20 books out there that I've signed. Every meeting I went to, I just made a new group, my home group. I didn't really know what it meant. I just liked the attention. And so I just kept signing up for home groups. And I just didn't know. And then finally, I did find a group where there was a meeting that met on Thursday nights. It was a closed meeting, and they studied the steps week after week. It was a big book study where they went through the steps using the big book. And I started to go to there, and I started to feel at home there, and they really welcomed me there. It was a great, really kind group of people, and they were so patient with me. And I would go every week and cry and kind of bring a lot of drama, and they just like loved me and let me come week after week, and we studied the steps, and I would start a lot of sentences with, I'm not on this step, but what I think is, and they just, nobody said anything, you know, nobody rolled their eyes at me, and they let me talk, and they let me cry, and they would just say, Megan, did you pause and pray? Megan, did you pause and pray? And I would come back week after week, you know, and then I started to learn what they were trying to tell me, and I started to learn about the steps. And I started to learn about pausing and praying. And when I had about 4 years of sobriety, I just felt like I kind of wanted something more, but I didn't really know what that looked like for me. And so I thought, I went to this meeting every week on Saturday nights. And it's my home group now. It's the Love and Service group. And I asked a woman to take me through the steps that was a member there, and I said, I'm not going to join, though. I'm not going to join your home group. I'm happy in my home group. And she said, that's fine. But I knew that there was something else that I wanted, but like a lot of my recovery has been that my old ideas have continued to avail me nothing. And so I had a lot of old ideas about this group and about joining a new group and why it wouldn't work for me. And I thought, like, they study the traditions, and that sounds really boring to me, and I like the steps because they're about me, and I like to talk about me, and I like people to hear about me, and so I thought, like, I'm not going to do that. And one time I went with a friend to that meeting on the tradition night, and I realized once we got there that it was the tradition night, and I was trying to say to him, could we make the other 8 o'clock meeting down the street, because this is the tradition night, and it's an hour and a half meeting, and this could get really boring, but we stayed, and my friend Alex that's here spoke, and he spoke on the seventh tradition, and my old ideas told me, like, I don't want to hear about money, that's going to be boring, this has nothing to do with me, and he spoke about being a taker in his life and about how AA has made him a giver. And the things that he talked about, I mean, this guy and me were like holding each other, crying at the end. It was one of the most beautiful meetings that I've been to in my whole life. And I realized, like, there's another idea that has availed me nothing. And I thought, you know, I can't have a home group that's on a Saturday night. I do too much fun things on Saturday nights. And I have too much of a life and I can't do that. And I was saying it to somebody else, and she said, but you go to that meeting every Saturday. And, like, there again, I realized, like, my old ideas have availed me nothing. And my home group does a lot of outside service work. They're on a lot of committees, and we actually have somebody on every committee except for one in the Rochester area. And so I thought, like, I don't want to do that. I had so much old ideas about outside service work. I thought, that's politics. That's going to be boring. I don't want to do that. And I thought, like, one time I heard somebody make an announcement about the budget committee, and I thought, they're going to make me join the budget committee. And I don't want to do that. I'm not good at math. I don't want to talk about the budget. And so then, you know, talking to my sponsor, she said, like, why don't you check out the PI committee, the Public Information Committee, and why don't you see what that's about? And I went there, and I loved it. And I realized, like, this is just people that love AA. This is people that want to help spread AA's message. And I joined the PI committee, and I realized, like, once again, my old ideas have availed me nothing. And I was invited to go to the business meeting of my home group one time, and that's when I, like, fell the most in love that you could ever fall in love with a group. I had never seen AA run that way. And I saw, like, all of these personalities come out, and I am very attracted to drama, and I thought, like, this is for me. There's these women that knit during the meeting and just kind of give you a hug and say hi and say they'll pray for you, and they were pissed at this business meeting, and I wanted in. I wanted in, and I wanted to be a part of that, and I wanted my opinion to be heard, and I ended up making this group my home group, and I just realized, like, again and again and again in my sobriety, like, my old ideas continue to avail me nothing. When I came in, I thought, like, I can't trust women, and I can't be monogamous, and I need to always, you know, this won't be fun. And I realized, like, I do trust women. I'm in a loving, committed relationship. This is fun for me. And, like, I don't always have to have fun. You know, like, that was, like, a requirement for my life. I always have to be having fun and enjoying myself. And, you know, one thing I continue to tell myself is, like, that God's okay with this. God wants me to act this way. God doesn't care that I'm doing this. And I have to continually look at, like, what are my old ideas today? And that's, like, true even in my group. One thing that I've, like, gotten so much from this convention this week is, like, the idea that I can't do this alone. I don't want to try to do it alone, but that's, like, one of the best parts to me about going to my home group is that, so I had a baby a year ago, and before that, I went to 7 meetings a week. My boyfriend and I were super involved in AA. I sponsored a ton of women. He sponsored a ton of guys. And that was how I found God, was meetings, meetings, meetings. And that was easy for me, and I felt connected to my fellows, and I didn't have to do a ton of prayer and meditation to feel super connected to God. And after I had a baby, it changed for me drastically. My seeking God has to look so much different than it used to. And I'm not able to go to a meeting every single night. And so one of the things that was suggested to me by my best friend Melissa that's here, she has a baby. She has a child, a daughter. And she said to me, like, make it to your home group every week. You know, like, make sure that you can do that. And so I've been able to get a babysitter every single week that I am able to go, that I'm in town and able to go. And that's just been okay for me. You know, like, we have my mom and we have my mother-in-law. And then we have friends, you know, like, going to my home group is so important to me that if I don't get to any other meeting that week, I find a babysitter. We've asked, like, the woman that lives downstairs to come up and stay with him. And I don't know her that well, but I know that it's important. I think she's super nice. I know that it's important for me to go. And I know if I just trust God and, you know, that it's going to be okay. And she's come and sat with the baby and put him to bed. And I've been able to go to my home group every single week. And I'm able to go there. And one thing that I can do is go there and help others. So I'm able to go there and see my sponsees and see who needs help. And another thing that I'm able to do is I'm able to go there and ask for help. And so sometimes I feel so insecure about when I need help. I want to always go to my sponsor well. I want her to say to her other sponsees, like, you got to go to Megan for this one because she's the most well of all my sponsees. I want her to really... And so for me, I find that there is a way that God lets me be vulnerable at my home group, and I'm able to go in and I see her and I say, like, we need to talk, you know, and I've been scared to talk to you about this, or I've been scared to mention this because I'm afraid that you're going to have me make amends. And then then I do have to make amends, but that's okay. And, you know, I've just found, like, for me, that showing up and doing AA makes the rest of my world okay. I one time there was the two people that I mentioned, Melissa and Alex, are married, and they gave a panel at my home group on relationships. And I was single at the time, and that's what I wanted. I wanted a boyfriend. I wanted a husband. And they have a beautiful life, and they live in a beautiful home and have a family, and they have nice cars and dogs and stuff that I want. So they were going to be on a relationship they were on a panel on relationships. So I went, and I brought my notebook, and I sat in the front row, and I thought, like, I'm going to find out how to get a husband that makes a lot of money. And I want to get a really nice car. And so she got up there from the podium, and I, like, got my notebook out ready to take notes on how she did it, and she said, do AA. Just do AA, and God will take care of you. And that was, like, I didn't want to hear that, but I thought, okay, if that's how it works, then I'll do AA. And then another time, and then when I found out I was pregnant, my sponsor said, call her. You know, this has happened to Melissa, and call her. She was pregnant in sobriety. And I called her and I said, like, I don't know what to do, and I'm really scared, and we don't have a ton of money, and I don't really know how this is going to look. And she said, like, just do AA, Megan. You know, like, do AA and God will take care of you. And then a few months ago, somebody really close to me went back out, and I didn't know what to do. And it came from inside me, though. You know, I just knew to do AA. And for me, the center of that has been my home group. It's been showing up there, and it's been doing service. One thing that they've taught me to do is not to, it's not social hour with my friends. And all of my friends, my best friends, my most beautiful friends in the world are a part of my home group. And I love to go and see them there. And my sponsor has taught me, like, it's not the time to go get in your clique and talk about all the stuff that's fun, the stuff that's going on in your life or the drama. It's a time to go and look for the one person that's sitting by themselves that looks a little scared. Or even the group of women that looks unfamiliar to you. That can be scary to me if I see a group of women sitting there that I think they don't want to talk to me. They already have it together. They already, you know, they'll think I'm weird if I go up there. But I know that, like, I want to welcome them. I want them to know that they're welcome here. And so I'm able to go do that. And I'm actually just got asked to sponsor a woman that I just, like, slowly each week just tried to say hi to, just tried to ask her how she was. And, you know, I said one time, you know, if you ever want to get coffee. And then one time she said, will you? And then she said, I'm looking for a sponsor. And I said, oh, okay. And I didn't want to say, I'll sponsor you. I didn't want to be that forward. And I said, okay, what are you looking for? And she said, oh, someone that has about 5.5 years that lives in Rochester that has a baby. And I said, Jessica, do you want me to sponsor you? She said, would you? And I said, yeah, of course I'll sponsor you. But it was just that, like, going up to her week after week after week, just saying, like, hi, welcome. How was your day? Do you want a cup of coffee? Tonight we're going to study this tradition. Tonight we'll look at this concept. If you don't know what you're talking about, you can ask people after. Or tonight we're going to be on this step. Do you have any experience with that? Just trying to be really kind and look her in the eye and let her know that she can sit with us if she wants to. And so it's completely transformed my life. You know, my home group is pretty well known in Rochester. We're a big group. We have about 50 members. And sometimes people don't like us. And sometimes there's rumors about us. There's somebody said to somebody else that we try to recruit home group members. We want to have more home group members than anybody else. But then there was another rumor about a Buffalo group that we hang out with, that they have a dating service. And that sounded way more fun than my rumor. I want that rumor that we have a dating service. We don't, but that sounded like a fun rumor. But I found that, you know, a lot of that is people's old ideas. You know, it's still true. And I had a lot of old ideas, and I just asked God to, you know, help me take those away and see the truth. So it was amazing that this was my topic today, because it is the center of my life. It is the best thing that I get to be a part of. I'm able to raise a baby in AA and go to these women and say, how do you do it? Can you show me how? I'm mad at my baby today because he's up all night, you know, and like, how do you do that? How do you? And they help me walk through that. So that's all that I have. Thanks for letting me be here.
Wow. So I'm a member of It's in the Book group in Helena, Montana. I've heard a lot of people share at this convention my experience. The only thing that seems to vary is the length of time that it takes. People get here hitting some kind of a bottom with booze. You know, it doesn't work anymore, or the going up is not worth the coming down, or, you know, whatever the words are, the music is all the same. And then we come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and we don't drink. And then we hit the bottom with not drinking. And we find out that not drinking is not the solution for alcoholism. A woman from Canada used to say, when you take the alcohol out of the alcoholic, you're left with the ick. And that's my experience, frankly, is, you know, I got here and I thought I was a saint with a drinking problem. And anybody else could have told you that was a lie, but I'm very delusional. And I did not know what alcoholism is. I didn't have a clue what alcoholism is. I just thought it was about drinking. And the longer I didn't drink, the crazier I got, and the more pain I was in, and I finally reached the same point not drinking that I had reached drinking. I wanted to die every day. I lived in Missoula where the river runs through it, and I'd walk over that bridge and over that river, and I wanted to jump in it. I mean, I was going to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. I was going to lots of meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, two most days. If I hadn't been, what the heck would have happened to me? I don't know. So I just want to read this little thing that says, what does AA do? This is from our literature, okay? This is the only thing. We have one job. We just have one job. We have a singleness of purpose, and we just have one job. And I got to tell you, we're not doing a very good job of it, is my esteemed opinion. Okay. AA members share their experience with anyone seeking help with a drinking problem. They give person-to-person service or sponsorship to the alcoholic coming to AA from any source. That's number one, what we do. Number two, the AA program, as set forth in our 12 steps, offers the alcoholic a way to develop a satisfying life without alcohol. That's number two. Three, this program is discussed at AA group meetings. That's it. That's all we got. That's all we do. I sponsor women, and they call me up, some of them after years of working with me, and I keep saying the same thing. I only have one answer for you. It's the 12 steps. Megan said it. Do AA. But not just randomly do AA. The steps are numbered for the intellectuals, right? So do the steps. Early this month, I'm so blessed, I got to go to Akron with 12 women for Founders Day. And we sat in the gatehouse, in the room where Bill and Bob met. We sat and we listened to three CDs, one by Bill talking about what happened, one Bob talking about what happened, and one Henrietta Sieberling, the woman who lived in the gatehouse and connected them. And it was amazing to me to sit in that room and to listen to them talk about the birth of Alcoholics Anonymous and how we got here. And we rode a tour bus from the gatehouse to the Mayflower. We went backwards. We went from the gatehouse to the Mayflower. And like Adam was talking about earlier, Bill made that walk 3.5 miles. Only 3.5 miles, and it wasn't blizzarding or anything. Yankees. So he walked. In the West, we have a big ego about that thing that we have out there. So 3.5 miles he walked from the Mayflower to Henrietta's gatehouse. And then he walked home because Bob was too drunk to meet with him that day, remember? So then the next day he walked. He made that walk, that 3.5 miles back. Thank God he did that. Thank God. So that's what we're about. That's what we do. And I want to talk about the darker side of the home group, okay? Because it's wonderful. It is wonderful. If it wasn't for a home group, I don't know what I would do. But Richard and I, my husband and I, co-founded a group. Big, enthusiastic. It got to be a big, enthusiastic group. It was started by a resentment and a pot of soup, actually, instead of a cup of coffee, a coffee pot. And we started this meeting. It got to be a big, enthusiastic, structured sponsorship group. Clancy called us a pocket of enthusiasm. And it was wonderful. We were talked about and lied about, and some of it was true. We did that for a long time. A couple decades we did that. And in 2007, that group imploded. And I'm not going to go into the reasons or any of that, but I'm going to tell you, if you have an experience like that, you can get through that. OK? okay? You can survive that. I know that because I have, and he has. And we're both still here. We're still active. A lot of those people who left are still sober. Some of the people who stayed, I don't know if they would have stayed sober if that hadn't happened to the group. It's interesting to watch how God works through the good and the bad. And so what I had to do at that time was I had to tuck my ego in and, trying to make a name for myself in an anonymous society. And I had to join Alcoholics Anonymous. I had to do that. I had a 27 year sober. I had to seek out the old timers in my town. I had to go to groups that I had judged them because they weren't quite doing it to suit me. You know, I have a higher level of pure sobriety, don't you know? And I had to go back to those groups. Thank God they were still there. Thank God they, like Adam said, they didn't, kick me out. And it's been an amazing, amazing process. I have to tell you, it's been a gift for me personally to go through that and to find out that God is the deal in Alcoholics Anonymous. Not the group, not even my sponsor. All those things are vital to me, vital to me. But it is God. It is God. He's the deal. And he is everything or he's nothing, right? Like the book says. So I still go to 4 committed meetings a week. Let me tell you what a committed meeting is. A committed meeting is a meeting where you don't have to think about whether you're going to go to the meeting or not. You just go to the meeting. You know what I mean? I have a book study I go to. I have a women's, oh God, love the women. A women's meeting, we call it the how and the why of it. We meet at the YWCA, and it's we get a lot of newcomers, which is very cool. And I go to a 12 and 12 meeting, and they were the people I used to hate because they, 12 and 12 is not as good as the big book. But they have the longest sobriety in my town, and so I go there. My home group is on Thursday nights. It's an open speaker meeting. And that's four. And when Dallas has his birthday, he just turned 46. In June, we share a birthday month. I go to his home group. They have a birthday meeting at the end of the month, and I go there. And there's another big speaker meeting in town that meets on Friday night. That's date night for me and my husband, so I don't usually make it there. But if somebody's speaking in my home from my home group or somebody I sponsor, I do that. I go to other meetings where women I sponsor go to celebrate their birthdays and such like that. And today I am a part of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not just a part of that group, I'm a part of AA as a whole. And last night when we all stood in that room and held hands and prayed the Lord's Prayer, oh my God. I didn't belong in my own family. I didn't fit anywhere. I used to tell people I was from Venus. I was like E.T., phone home, waiting for the mothership to come and get me. I don't feel that way today. I don't feel that way today. And I am so grateful for that. My second favorite piece of AA literature is a little pamphlet called A Member's Eye View. And I don't know if I can get through this without crying, but that's okay. I am personally convinced that the basic search of every human being from the cradle to the grave is to find at least one other human being before whom he can stand completely naked, stripped of all defense, pretense or defense, and trust that person not to hurt him, because that other person has stripped himself naked too. This lifelong search can begin to end with the first AA encounter. And then at the end of this little pamphlet, he says, if I can find it. Sorry. We ought not be organized, right? It's the only one of the principles we really adhere to, I think, so we ought not be organized. This thing's longer than I thought it was on these little bitty pages. Okay. This coming Sunday in the churches of many of us, there will be read that portion of the Gospel of Matthew, which recounts the time when John the Baptist was languishing in the prison of Herod, and hearing of the works of his cousin Jesus, he sent two of his disciples to say to him, "Art thou he who is to come, or shall we look for another?" And Christ did as he so often did. He did not answer them directly, but wanted John to decide for himself. And so he said to the disciples, "Go and report to John what you have heard and what you have seen. The blind see, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead rise, the poor have the gospel preached to them." Back in my childhood catechism days, I was taught that the poor in this instance did not mean only the poor in a material sense, but also meant the poor in spirit, those who burned with an inner hunger and an inner thirst. And the word gospel meant quite literally the good news. More than 16 years ago, four men, my boss, my physician, my pastor, and the one friend I had left, working singly and together, maneuvered me into AA. Tonight, if they were to ask me, "Tell us, what did you find?" I would say to them what I now say to you. I can tell you only what I have heard and seen. It seems the blind do see, the lame do walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead rise, and over again, in the middle of the longest day or the darkest night, the poor in spirit have the good news told to them. God grant that it may always be so.